until the 1700s in Ireland, fallow and the native red deer had two predators to worry about, wolves and humans. Along with wolves, we've hunted deer for millennia, a recognition of the value of venison meat that's extremely low in fat, but packed full of protein and iron. But that was then. Today, not only do we have more deer than ever, but we also have two, possibly three or four new species that have naturalised in the countryside. And somehow along the way, venison has come to be regarded as an elite meat, expensive to buy, difficult to cook, a meat for the well-heeled, strange for a prolific wild animal. In the last of her Made in Ireland series, Ellen McSweeney has gone deer stalking with a professional hunter and tried a bit of venison along the way. Ella, good morning.
Morning.
And a happy new year to you.
And you, and you.
Tell us what deer species are in Ireland now. You mentioned three or four.
Yeah, we have, obviously we have our native red. We have fallow, brought in by the Normans. We have Sika deer, brought in by Lord Powerscourt into Wicklow about 1860. We also have recently the muntjac, the barking deer, which has been reported in various counties in Ireland in the last sort of 4 years or so, probably came through England and Northern Ireland. We have red Sika hybrids, but we also have, in an official report by the Department of Agriculture a few months ago, rumours of recent introduction of roe deer and also Chinese water deer. Now, they say they're unconfirmed, but the fact they put them in a report shows that they probably are, they have been reported, and I've certainly spoken to people who have seen them as well.
They shoot deer these days, but there was, in olden times, the easy method. What was that?
I don't know. I mean, it seems so easy to use a gun, doesn't it, now? But it's interesting. There's a report recently of in the Blackstairs Mountains in County Carlow. A man called Mick Monaghan went walking, and he was on the top of it, and he noticed something under the peat, and it was a bit of wood sticking out. And the curious man he was, he dug up and saw that there was a few more bits of wood, and it was a piece of timber with a rectangular hole inside of it, and it was identified by the National Museum as an ancient deer trap dating back to about 1,400. Years. So
wow.
This was the very laborious way of catching deer in the past, which would have meant that the feet would have got stuck in the hole and they couldn't have got out.
Now, we know what a deer stalker hat is like, but what is a deer stalker? I mean, what does a deer stalker do? Does a deer stalker inevitably kill?
Absolutely. But what is interesting about the deer stalker that I went out with, who's a fantastic gentleman called Angus Lee, who is the gamekeeper for the wonderful, majestic Kilruddery estate just outside of Bray, is that he stalks very much man on man. So he doesn't sit on a high chair. He doesn't lamp, which is a very easy way of killing deer. But he creeps around the woods very slowly, very quietly, and waits and waits and waits. And this is a man of incredible skill and patience. I met him at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning in Lara. It was very dark, no one was around. And he told me what we were going to do that morning.
So these are my two dogs, Sika and Odin.
Sika?
Sika, yeah. Well, Sika is probably the most prolific deer around here. And, well, he just got named that because it's damn difficult to name a dog.
Do you need dogs to hunt deer?
You don't need dogs to hunt deer. You need dogs to track deer, to follow up possibly a wounded deer. Or also, there's an extremely strong sense of smell. And Sika, actually, if I'm working with him into the wind, he will smell the deer long before I see them.
And the fact, I mean, we're trying to be camouflaged here, but these Springer Spaniels are white with brown spots. Does that matter?
Well, they're pretty low on the ground. You know, we don't really try to be camouflaged, but it's more a case of movement and shape. Deer are apparently colourblind, so you could go out in bright orange if you want. I mean, in the States, a lot of people have to wear hunter's orange, so they're not mistaken for a deer.
So they're not shot themselves?
Yeah.
What's the plan this morning?
Plan this morning is we're going to go further down the valley to a forest, and we'll take a walk down a track, down to the river, and then up to a large clearing, where I hope the deer are going to come down through that clearing to their bedding area.
Now, do deer stalkers shoot any deer they come across?
They will look, obviously, at any deer they come across, because it's quite difficult when you're waiting and waiting. But no, I mean, a good deer stalker, someone who's managing the population, which is obviously very crucial in Ireland, will always take a wounded deer and will also take a shot that is very clear and clean. And what is remarkable is, and I've spoken to farmers who manage their deer population, and they say that if you take a clean shot, and it's a high skill to do this, the deer can fall and they might be in a group of other deer, and the other deer won't even flinch. They'll just be suddenly, you know, this collapsed deer beside them and they won't even flinch. They'll just think they heard a loud noise. Mm. But no, I mean, they take a wounded deer first. But also if you have, for example, a mother who's in calf with also her last year's calf, generally they take the last year's calf. The way in which you manage deer in Ireland, though, is that you take the females, because it's the females who
are the
reproduce.
Ones. And, yeah. I mean, we'll come to the population of deer at the moment, but it is almost problematic. It's grown so much. And there are seasons for shooting.
There are seasons for shooting. I mean, you can't just take whatever you want. Although I think with muntjac, you can basically take whatever you can find. In December, it's male and female. So at the moment, you can take male and female. But the female season opens in November. The male season opens in September. So it is a little bit. You have to be careful.
OK, bring us on your hunt then.
So we went down to deeper in the valley in Glendalough. It was lovely, you know, the blackbirds were doing that sort of song they do in the morning, that sort of warning call. So everything was slightly waking up. Deer are like teenagers. They are nocturnal during the daytime and they're very much alive at nighttime. And we went into the woods. The gun came out and we went deer stalking.
We're down in the Vale of Clara, close to the Avoca River.
It's first thing in the morning. Mm-hmm. The deer have been active all night.
Yeah.
They are coming now to bed.
Yes.
And it's at that point then that it is the best time to be able to find them.
Well, there'll be a little bit of movement of the deer in the fields coming back into the woods to bed down. And with a bit of luck, we might be able to get one before they disappear for the day. One of the key things to deer stalking, watching and waiting. You know, it's not an action movie. I'll go in front and you... Close behind me. Stay close behind me. Okay?
Okay.
Right.
What kind of eyesight do deer have?
Very good. Extremely good.
Are they more driven by their eyes than their ears?
Both their senses of smell, sight and hearing are far better than ours. They're a good adversary. And also here, because we're in a forest, the wind tends to swirl around, so unfortunately there's often a good chance of them smelling us before we even see them.
When they move together, do they move in a particular pattern? Is it males first, females first?
You don't actually at this time of the year see many adult male deer, because after the rut they're pretty exhausted. You'd more expect to see a female deer with last year's calf in tow with her.
So now we wait.
Yeah.
What's extraordinary he was saying there about the male deer being exhausted. I mean, he said you come across this time of year male deer who are so exhausted by the rut and by sort of maintaining their, you know, their women, that they're skinny, they're just wrecked. They're probably quite easy to get because they're just exhausted by the whole thing.
It's well for them. there's been an explosion in the deer population in Ireland. I mean, quite a remarkable increase.
The figures are incredible. I mean, if you look at the 94-95 shooting season in Ireland, you're talking about 4,749 deer were shot. By 2009, this increased to over 31,000. And even if you look at the native red, the increase from something like 78 to 2008 was 565% increase in that population.
But the fact that so many are being shot is not an indication that we have a problem kind of keeping them going. Quite the opposite. They are...
There's no coordination. There's no national policy.
I mean, there's loads
policy.
Of them.
There's loads of them. And because there's no coordination, so an example would be you're supposed to get the women, the females. But in Ireland, up until recently, because of this notion of trophy hunting, so going for the stag, it's been pretty much equal. And only now is it about 50% of the deer that are shot by hunters are females. But because we have such a problem with poaching and illegal hunting, we don't really know. And there's no national survey of deer in Ireland either. But if you look at it, for example, the damage they do, I mean, they do damage to agriculture. Cultural crops, they do damage to forestry, they're dangerous for people on the roads. So they do need to be managed. They need to also be managed for their own sake.
So, did you see a deer?
We did. I mean, you need the patience of a saint, you know. I mean, and Angus can just sit there and watch eagle-eyed. We watched, waited and waited and waited, and we did eventually see a fallow deer.
There's a fallow deer about 100 yards ahead. I'll just creep up ahead and see if it's disappeared. More than likely it's disappeared. At least three, probably. Two does and a calf, maybe three does.
So is it worth following, or is that not how it works?
Well, the deer didn't appear very alarmed. They were just moving. They were were down on the corner of the field. They love feeding in this corner, but there's a lot less trees here, so it's easier to see them and to get a safe shot. The wood is very thick. A branch like that will deflect the bullet, and you don't know where it's going to go. You do see the deer. The heart rate goes up, but you have to be very, very careful about taking a shot. Anytime you have to be careful about taking a shot. We'll go down here in some dead ground, down to the corner of the wood. There's a few little hillocks in there, and we'll see if we can get a look at them.
Okay. Heart rate going up is exactly right. I mean, I've done lots of sort of bird watching all the rest of my life, but when it comes to this, I mean, never has a walk been so exciting ever. I mean, it's just remarkable. Even though the outcome is especially for someone who's not hunted before, it's kind of tragic, you know, that you're going to kill something.
And did you kill anything?
We didn't. And in some ways, it was kind of a relief for me. But, you know, it would have been very interesting to do that, but we didn't. They are incredible animals. They appear, they disappear. And, you know, I started seeing deer everywhere. I started seeing deer in the shape of ferns, everything. It was incredible. You know.
The point of it all, though, for the hunter is the pot and venison. The demand for venison, there was a lot of farmed deer a few years ago, and perhaps it's still going on and being exported, but the kind of fad for venison has gone.
Yeah, I mean, we don't, as you mentioned, it is considered quite an elite meat. Most of the farmed venison in Ireland is all for export to either Britain. There's a big demand for venison in Britain and also in Denmark. But, you know, venison is a fantastic meat. It's low in fat, it's high in iron, it's low in cholesterol, it's very high in good proteins that easy to absorb. And luckily, in the shape of Ed Hick, the fantastic butcher, he joined us and he came with some lovely venison for us to sizzle.
This is a small Metz stove. My little mountaineering trousers.
And we're going to fry up some venison.
Yeah, we got some strip loin of venison, which we're going to fry up and have on a little bit of bread with some nice fresh green leaves.
And the breed?
The breed is Sika.
Cool.
It was shot in Wicklow. It was bought by me from Mickey Lee in the last 10 days. So, this is a piece from the top side of the leg, which we're just going to slice into finger-thick slices, literally 2 minutes each side.
Why do so few people eat venison?
I think it just has a name of being something a bit elite. It somehow either falls into a category of very rich, available only in Mayfair, in shops in London, or poor food. The middle ground is just completely cut out of it.
Certainly hunting them in Ireland is something that's been going on for centuries.
Oh, sure. I think as long as there's been deer here, they've been hunted, you know. Generally, it would have been the preserve of large landowners at a time. They would have been the only people who would have actively managed deer, I think. Put the three slices of fillet there onto the pan. You can just hear it sizzling there nicely. Just frying these as it happens in rapeseed oil. These are literally going to get 2 minutes on either side. So there's going to be a little pink in the centre.
Can you treat venison much like beef?
Yeah, it's a little less forgiving though. A lot of wild foods in general, be that venison, be that duck, whatever, be that pheasant, they're not as forgiving as a lot of our farmed foods just because they would have a way lower fat content. You really got to watch it. This will go from being pink, juicy and tender to a piece of timber in a matter of 2 minutes if you overcook it by that.
How long have you been hunting it?
Oh gosh, I think since I was about 6-7 years of age would have been the first time I would have gone out with my dad.
And your father, why did he do it?
His dad was big into fishing, that was his thing. And my dad just sort of took, I don't know, a little turn left at a crossroads and decided to concentrate on shooting rather than fishing. But it was just something that they did, they had access to, they enjoyed.
And does it tend to be something that's passed down the generations in Ireland?
It's quite difficult to get into. It's quite an antisocial activity, as you know, from getting up at this hour of the morning. Mm. So it's something that you're not likely to happen upon, really. It's something that you almost need to be introduced to. And had I not had access through my dad, I just don't think I would have ended up doing it, you know.
And the good news is that there are some draft regulations or ideas coming from the department, and we'll see how they are formalised over the coming while. Ella, thank you very much. That's the last of the series Made in Ireland. If you want to get photographs, audio and video of the features, go to facebook.com/Made in Ireland. And this series was an Athena Media production with the support of the BAI Sound and Vision Scheme. All of Ella's podcasts available on iTunes and on the RTE website. And you can get in touch with Ella, madeinireland@ireland.com. Ella, Once again, Happy New Year.
And you.